everybody.
Whoa.
Welcome, everybody. When we plan these rooms, we use advanced data modeling techniques to make sure we have the perfect seatings for all of these sessions. No, I'm just kidding. My name is Siam. I'm the product manager on the Office BI team. And I have with me Carolyn, who is the principal group program manager from SQL BI Engineering. So between us, I think we'll be able to cover all the bases regarding Microsoft BI. Please do keep in mind that this session is a 200-level session, so we won't be talking about the architectures or what hybrid OLAP is and things like that. We're focusing on the more interesting parts of the stack, and hopefully we'll be able to show you a little bit about the glimpse of the future with prototype devices as well. That meaning that not all the products that we show today are released at this moment. I'm sure many of you would notice what this is. It's the IBM PS2, Personal Computer System 2. And it was the first PC that I was fortunate enough to experience when I was a smaller child. It looks like color, but it's not actually a color display. It's just a blue and white color. And it was released in 1987, which was actually coincidentally the same year that the first version of Excel was released, Excel version 1.05 in 1987, and it was the start of where we tried to democratize data analysis, whether we believe it or not today. But back then, we started with this notion of rows and columns. How do we create data sets? How do we create spreadsheets that are easy for just normal users to use? As you can see, that the first platform was based on the Mac. A few years later, we quickly released version 2.0, which is sort of colorish. Seems more like an 8-bit color palette. And then we had 3.0 a few years later. And we had 4.0 with, you know, kind of going with the new Windows theme with color. And then we have 5.0. We skipped 6.0 because it's a bad number in some countries. This is version 7.0, which is also known as Excel 95, released at the same year as Windows 95 came out. The next version was Excel 97. And then we had the famous Excel or Office 2000, which we know that a lot of people, even today, use it in their environments. We quickly continued on to the kind of XP theme with Office 2002. A year after that, we released Office XP as well. There's very subtle differences. If you notice the dots on the top, they're more 3D and popping. But that was Office XP. 4 years later, we released 2007. And this was the first year in Excel 2007 that we actually introduced the theme or the concept of business intelligence for masses, right? With SQL Server version 7.0 back in 1998, we had the OLAP model as part of that. And we had in SQL Server, I think 2000, we had very basic ETL tools. But with SQL Server 2005, we had the full capabilities of OLAP models, ROLAP, MOLAP, and all those BI technologies, including SSIS, built into the database services. And connecting that with the Office 2007 and SharePoint 2007 products, we were able to provide the full suite of BI capabilities all within the Microsoft stack. That means that in the past, before we had Excel 2007, we relied on third-party products like Cognos or Business Objects and whatnot. 2007 was a huge success regarding BI. We were able to have users use Excel for the first time to do some of their BI activities. We also increased the line limit. Before, we were limited to 65,000 rows. I'm sure some of the IT pros out here have had nights and days, you know, cutting their data sets to 65,000 rows because their end users wanted to use that data. With 2007, we increased that limit to 1 million rows, which I'm sure may have helped your lives a little bit. Or not. 3 years later, we released Excel 2010. And this was the release that we've introduced the concept of an in-memory engine called PowerPivot. It was first introduced as an add-in, so it wasn't built right into the product, but it was very popular because it introduced the notion of having large data set analysis within the Excel client. And so before, well, we had the 1 million row limit, and people were trying to crunch as much data as they could, you know, reducing their column size, trying to, you know, fitting all that data in there. We now did not have that limit with PowerPivot, because as long as you had the memory, And because Power Pivot is based on in-memory technology, that's based on the X Velocity engine, that's based on a compression algorithm, that's based on a tabular model, we were able to put in lots of data inside this new Power Pivot functionality. So that was 2010. And these were all working across the client, the server, and the services, and like in SharePoint and Excel services. And just a few weeks ago, we released Excel 2013, which was, I think, the 13th version. The code name was Excel 15, but it's probably not the Excel 15 version because we skipped two versions in between. But this is Excel 2013. And the biggest enhancements that I'd like to point out up front is that we've actually embedded all of the popular features like Power Pivot, Power View, some new features like Inquire for control, all into the base product. So all of these BI features that we've introduced bits by bits in the past, we've now embedded them and shipped them out of the box with the Excel client. So now all you have to have is the Excel client, and you're good to go for your personal BI needs. And we'll be demoing a show of that in my demo. So today's theme will be divided into two big themes, so first being simplicity and second being fun. I'll be doing the first part, talking about simplicity, of how power users and end users can create their data models, their BI business, and mimic them in using the new Power Pivot features in Excel. I'll also be demoing some of the new features like Quick Explore and Quick Analysis that helps the core experience of Excel users to help navigate and share those insights with their colleagues. The second part of our presentation will be carried out by Carolyn, who will talk about more of the fun stuff. We've actually called it fun, and she'll be talking about the new features that we introduced with Power View and dashboards, and even a little glimpse of the mobile features that we're announcing for the first time, or not announcing, I'm sorry, that we're showing the prototype version of that new app for the first time in our session. So with that, let me switch over to my first demo. So this is Excel 2013. We try to make it cleaner, leaner, and as you can see, we'll start with a blank worksheet. Just to show you kind of the context of what I have in my worksheet, I have connections to the SQL Server database on the back end. I have a Power Pivot data model that's embedded inside the workbook, and I have other copy and pasted data directly inside the workbook as well. Just for the BI users out there, because we've embedded the Power Pivot engine directly into the Excel client, every pivot table you create, every pivot chart you create, are actually powered by that new Power Pivot engine that's embedded in the Excel workbooks, right? So there's no more separate process that powers a different model. It's all embedded inside your workbook. And so now we call that model the Excel data model. Speaking of Power Pivot, we still have the same menu. It's all inside the ribbon. And for the power users out there, you can actually now model and create hierarchies, KPIs, and whatnot directly inside the Excel client. We have the new diagram view that I'm showing you today. So if you have your sheets, they look like tables with columns, and you could actually model your data directly inside the client. For the non-BI professionals out there, creating a data model, creating an OLAP cube took months to create, right? You had to create your custom aggregations, you had to create your hierarchies, your custom KPIs and all that. We've tried to make it easier for those power users to create these models ad hoc, right? Of course, for larger implementations, you might want to still have your OLAP cubes. But for those ad hoc cases or for the smaller deployments, it's always useful to have the capability to do that directly from the Excel client as well. Okay. So as soon as you import all your data into Power Pivot, the first view you'll see is actually a data view like this. And so you'll have these different table-like features, which are like sheets in Excel, all input your data directly inside the workbook. The new diagram view allows you to look at the relationships for those tables, right? And you can even create those new relationships simply by dragging and dropping the data sets. For example, I can drag the offer ID directly to the offer table like this, and it'll create the relationship. Now, it'll throw an error because I've already created the relationship before, but you get the idea. So simply dragging and dropping will create relationships, and as you can imagine, we can create hierarchies and KPIs directly from this UI. It's actually creating the relationship. OK, almost there. You can see from the bottom, the bar there, that it's actually creating the relationship between the two tables that you see now. I'm almost finishing. about that. Let me really start it. So while it loads, oh, there we go. Simply creating relationships is easy as dragging and dropping those different columns or the different members or dimensions directly to the tables. It's also possible to create KPIs and hierarchies directly from each of these tables by simply clicking on the hierarchy button, and it will create the hierarchy on the bottom, and you can drag and drop the different members directly into these different hierarchies. So if you go back to data view, you can see that we have a new window on the bottom of the Power Pivot window. Now, if I wanted to create custom aggregations, all I have to do is go to the AutoSum place, and I can create the sum, the average, the count, distinct counts, min, and average, and so on. Right. And I can also add KPIs, key performance indicators, directly to these different types of aggregations. And it'll bring up the KPI window that you've seen before in tools like performance point services. And I can create, like, for example, margin point, and I can drag these dots. So if I want red button to show up if it's before 36%, if I want green or good to be above 90% profit margin, I can configure these directly into the client as well. So I've shown you a little bit about the new Power Pivot embedded engine inside Excel client. For those Power users out there, it's now possible to create these types of models directly from Excel without having to open up tools like Visual Studio and whatnot to create these models. And we wanted to, the vision is to make it easier and easier for business users to create these models themselves so that you don't have to always contact IT in order to create these data models. We want to lower the burden of the IT for these types of tasks, and also for the people who actually do the business, it makes sense for them to create the models that they're, you know, that they want to answer the questions that they have for. So now that I have my model, it's time to actually create the report. So creating pivot tables is easier than before. You simply go to the field list on the right side. And for example, I want to see the retail price as well as the wholesale price and maybe the purchase count. Now these are the sum of the values that I've selected. And I want to view these by the different movie genres. A few clicks like that allows me to divide my data into different views. And I can view the movie counts, the wholesale prices, by action movies, by comedy movies, and whatnot. Before I go further, we used to say that Excel was a BI tool and that you could drill down by actually expanding. Now, for the BI users out there, this wasn't exactly classified as a real drill down. This is just an expand operation, right? And so what we introduced is we've introduced a new feature called Quick Explore. Quick Explore pops up as soon as you point your mouse or your finger on a pivot table. This allows you to do a real drill down. So if I drill down by category, it'll refresh the pivot table to drill down to the actual dimension underneath it. Now, just to take the questions out beforehand, all of these features work on the client as well as in SharePoint and Excel Server, as well as on SharePoint Online in the cloud. So you will have these buttons coming up in both the client, the server, and the services. And I'll create a few other graphics with it. A new feature is also called recommended charts. So if I have a chart like this, if I have a grid like this, I'm not sure which kind of chart is best for my data, Excel will actually recommend for your data set a clustered column chart would look the best and would make the most sense. So it automatically recommends and actually selects a chart for you. And so I have a built BI report directly in a few clicks. It's within the Excel client. So I have my data model. I've created a simple report. But I also have some data that I've just copied and pasted directly inside Excel, especially like the movie directors that I like. And one of the common tasks that a lot of BI users or even just general users do is they have to parse this data so that it makes sense or cleans the data, in other words, right? And I have a lot of movie directors. I want to have their first names and last names divided. And so what I normally do is I start typing, and I'll do this for all of these. But as soon as I type the second word, Excel will figure out the pattern that you're trying to fill out and it'll fill the rest out for you. Now imagine if this was 10,000 rows. Oh, okay, yeah. Let's try that again. I'll start with the second row. There you go. So this is the new pattern matching technology that's built right into Excel. And you can imagine how much of this would save your hours. You know, it's simply typing in data, your addresses, time dimensions, you know, all inside using the new flash flow capabilities, allowing you to do a lot of this data cleansing very quickly. And remember, all of these features that I've shown you before, these are in Excel. So all of your actions are actually recorded. So if you drill down, drill up, flash fill, create reports, charts, you can always go back. Your friendly control Z will always work. You can, you know, go back and forth as much as you want. Another new feature that we've implemented to make it easier for users to navigate their data is called quick analysis. We're trying to go with this quick kind of terminology. And with the quick analysis, we can actually do very quickly do find duplicate values, unique values, see what the different charts will look like, how the totals will look like. And we always, you know, wanted to know how the pivot charts would look before actually creating them, right? And so we built these previews using these charts for the new users for BI and analytics. Hopefully these new features will help them, you know, ease the pain to ramp up to a real BI user, right? Okay. And of course, this will select the chart and help me build it. But I only have text data, so it won't make sense. But anyway, this new quick analysis lens or quick analysis button will allow users to, you know, quickly find values and visualize their data with the click of a button. Okay. So I have my data model. I've created a report. I cleansed my data. But there's actually one point that was missing in the past in our stack, was that as more and more of these BI reports, these Excel workbooks, became more important, we got a lot of feedback that it's very hard to lock down or track the changes, especially as these reports are now, you know, the master data file for sales processes and for field sales and all that, right? Even within Microsoft, we use these Excel workbooks as a master file for all of our field engagements, our revenue, and all that. And so it was very critical for IT to actually lock down and find the changes for that. Let me open up a second file. About 8 months ago, we acquired a company called Prodiance, and this company was specialized in spreadsheet management. There will be a separate session in a few days on that, particularly on that subject. But to show a little overview of that is, we've acquired this company and actually extracted the client piece and embedded the client piece called Inquiry into Excel. We extracted the server piece and implemented that piece as part of SharePoint. So today I'll show you the Excel piece. And as soon as you install Excel 2013, you'll see the new Inquire tab up above. The Inquire tab is a quick check. It checks your workbook if you have errors, formula errors, if you have duplicate values, if you made any changes. It can compare different files to ensure that you have one version of the truth as well. For example, I can run a workbook analysis, and it will actually run the report. It will read every cell that you have, even all the very hidden cells that you have in like ZZZY 2010. It'll find all those values and find the formula errors as well, right? So it'll do that sanity check that all the IT pros wanted to do before, and it'll run this report for you. So if you have linked workbooks, if you have visible sheets, if you have hidden sheets or very hidden sheets, whatever those are, I'm sure some of you know what those are. And then like formula errors, basic formula errors or numeric constants, and you can customize this list as well, right? And warnings. Fortunately, I only have one warning. I don't have a title. And even that can be customized to become a warning, right? This is just the client piece. We also have the server piece that crawls the entire corporate network of all your SharePoint document libraries. It even crawls the network connected drive. So if your corporate policy allows you to tap into the user's shared files, you even crawls those folders to find the rule-based thing. So if you have workbooks that are in corporate files that have external data connectivity, or if that doesn't match the rules that you set before, you can set these policies to find those workbooks and lock them down. It also finds relationships. So you can imagine that this is a simple demo. I only have four relationships. But if it's a corporate demo, we ran this within our internal environment, and this looked like a star map. There were thousands of reports that were connected to our MS Sales master database. And you can find those relationships as well. You can also compare files. If you have two versions of the same file, you can see the changes that have happened between the two files from the point of time. Right now, I can see that I changed the directors to directors in value 2. I deleted a sheet from position 3. I added columns from CDG. I entered values and whatnot. I deleted values. So you can actually use this tool to find the changes and track the lineage of the data sets that you created inside this Excel workbook, whether it lies in your desktop, on the document libraries in SharePoint, and whatnot. So this new tool will help, hopefully help the IT pros and the people who are doing governance to track down these BI workbooks and these Excel workbooks that are becoming more and more important inside your environments as well. So finally, we've shown you the client piece. Now I'll show you the final piece of publishing to SharePoint. Right? In the past, we used to go to File, and we went to Share, or Export, or Save As, and we saved it to SharePoint. Now this is all supported today as well. But we also support just simply dragging and dropping into a folder. So for example, if I have a BI folder, and I have a BI file, let's say it's because the file that I showed before had 100 million rows, which was 220 megabytes, for the sake of time, I'll just save a smaller file that's 7 megabytes. Simply just dragging and dropping the Excel file to the folder will start the upload process, and it will upload this to the folder as well. So you have many choices. You can publish it from your client machine using the traditional method, or you can start dragging and dropping, and even using the new SkyDrive Pro to sync between these reports on your SharePoint sites, on your mobile devices, and also your client's PCs as well. So once these are uploaded, I can open the file inside the browser using the browser experience as well. So for those users who don't have the Excel client, they can also use the browser to view their reports as well. Okay. Inside these reports, we have filters, as we had before, which we call slicers. Oops, which we call slicers. It always works on the second time for some reason. Yes. And we can have the new timeline filter. The new timeline filter allows you to quickly filter your data by time. So if I want to look at the fourth quarter, I can simply just drag and drop October, November, December, and I'll filter the graphs according to your selections as well. Again, the quick explore is both on the client as well as on the server. So even on the web, I have a true drill down or drill up or whatnot capabilities built in. The biggest feature that our Excel BI team is proud about is a new introduction of the field list in the browser, right? So now you can pivot directly from the browser. I want to see values under rows, and you'll see the pivot happen in the browser as well. Thank you. And this opens up a lot of possibilities. Do we really even need the client, right? Once you have the model built in, you can use the browser to change your views, change your models, filter, sort, change the pivots, and re-pivot as well directly from the browser. Yes, we have one question.
Is that Sparkline and a pivot table? Is that new?
So the question was, is there Sparklines? I don't see. Oh, are you talking about these signals? Right. These signals were here in 2010 as well. But in 2013, we've done a better job of mimicking a better rendering experience in the browser. So for example, 3D charts, shades, and these types of icons are more have more parity between the client and the server. So they look much better in essence.
But there are spark lines.
Yes, spark yeah. lines.
They are supported.
Okay. Right. So that was the end of my demo. I'll switch back to the PowerPoint deck. So the first portion, I guess, to summarize is we try to make it easier for both BI Power users and BI users in general to help model their data inside their client without ever leaving the Excel client, create KPIs, hierarchies, relationships, and then add these core functionalities in the client to navigate their data through quick explore and quick analysis, as well as sanitize their data sets using the inquire feature. All these features are built into Excel 2013 natively, and I'll switch it over to Carolyn, who will carry off with the fun part of our session today.
That's quite a billing, So Young. Thanks. I get to do the fun stuff. Okay, so unlike So Young, I don't have a degree in computer science, so I'm not going to show a computer. But when I was in school, everybody has a chance to use Excel at some point in their lives, right? And really, my foray into business intelligence was one summer during while I was in college. I was very fortunate. I got a summer internship at the Center for Economic Policy Research. My degree is in economics. And I had the fortune of working with this man. His name is Manuel Trachtenberg. He was a visiting professor at the time at my university. And he was studying prices of cars and how they've changed in elasticity over time, historically. And that sounds really sexy, but what I actually really did was I spent many, many hours in the library looking at old books, right? Because back in those days, it wasn't like you could go onto the web and find a data set. My whole job, most of the summer, was spending time in the stacks at the library trying to find the one data set or the two data sets that I had to type into Excel. And then I would show them to him and ask him, hey, does this look like the data you're looking for? And he'd be like, okay, here's a formula. Go try it out. And I'd enter it in Excel. I'd gotten to take exactly one Excel class before this internship, which probably got me the job in the first place. And then if we were lucky, we would get something like this, right? Really nice. These are actually charts from the paper that was published based on the work that he done and I got contributed to. And so these are about price elasticity over time. And that's a great result, right? And he was so excited when I would find the right data, enter it into Excel, we'd get that formula working, and it would show a pattern that matched what he was looking for. So that was awesome. That was a great summer internship. And he was so happy with what I had done, he recommended that I work with two different professors the next year. And these two professors, they were studying chemical analysis and chemical production. So I went to visit them, and they kind of had a similar job. Apparently, you know, once you get good in Excel, that kind of goes a long way. But instead of going to the stacks to find books with data sets, I showed up and he showed me books that were like this. He says, well, there are these publications of chemical data sets and their production, and it was in a bookcase that was this big, right, and like this wide. So my whole summer was going through each of the books, and there were tables of the production numbers, and my job was to enter those tables into more Excel spreadsheets. Except they were more complicated this time, right? Every year had a different book, and every set of chemicals had a different book. And so it wasn't find the one or two data sets that really worked well. It was go through these 100 books, enter them into 200 spreadsheets, 500 spreadsheets, and then we'll try to do something with them, right? So my whole summer was spent entering the data, and that was fine. Except that, you know, their instructions to me were, try to make it as consistent as possible when you enter the data in, right? Try to make the columns the same. But I had no idea. And the authors of the books were very liberal, right? Every year they produced these numbers, but just like in the real world, they would add a little to this table and take a little away from this table, and I'd be entering the data, and I'd feel bad about not entering some columns and not others. So I basically translated the data into the spreadsheets that looked like what they came from. So after I finished my internship, that was all I did, was get the data in, right? So I talked to them about 4 months later, and the professor said, I said, how are things going? Did you guys publish your paper? And they said, no, not really. We hired a graduate student after you who knew Access and was trying to put your data sets all together into one data set. Right, so they were trying to take the 500 worksheets that I had built and put them together so they could do the analysis, right? And he said, he didn't really have very good luck with the data that you put together. And he said, do you know Access? I said, no, I don't do Access. I only do Excel, right? Access was this thing that I just didn't understand at all. I tried to go and look at it, and it didn't have rows and columns. It was very confusing. You had to actually know how to create tables. I didn't know what those were at the time. So basically, I created my own data mess, right? And I felt guilty about it ever since. And I think that that's part of the reason why I'm in this business, is because I like to try to make things easier for end users, and I look back on myself as that kind of end user. So if you look at the evolution of the business intelligence market as a whole, we started with these spreadsheets that people used, and they were really popular. Then we made these enterprise information systems, and then we invested in dimensional modeling and OLAP. And OLAP had multiple flavors, MOLAP and ROLAP and HOLAP. And Siyoung mentioned some of these at the beginning of the talk, right? And then we, of course, needed to do some reporting off of that. And after we did some reporting, well, we had multiple kinds of reports. We realized operational reporting, ad hoc reporting, they're very different. And then people said, well, we don't really just want these things in dimensional models. We want them in relational DWs also. And DW models you put back into the data. And you need some kind of extract process to clean it all, and column stores, and NoSQL came along after we made SQL a success. And then, of course, big data is a big new thing, and everybody's talking about big data. And that comes with a whole bunch of Hadoop, and what do we have? We kind of have that mess, just like when I went from entering simple tables into trying to create a data system, right? And a lot of what we do, as Sayang said, is to try to simplify that mess and make it easy for end users to do the thing that they want to focus on, which is get the insights that they need. And that's kind of the whole point of the work that we've done by putting everything into Excel, as Sayang told you, showed you. So the other half of the talk and the other word that we're going to focus on is fun. And this is the picture of, I have two daughters. This is my younger daughter. She just turned 3. And her world is very different than mine, right? Growing up, she will live with data. She will not have to go to an Excel class, probably, to learn how to use data. Right? Data is going to be a part of her everyday life. She knows the number, she'll have the number of friends on Facebook, her achievements in all kinds of games. Statistics are really becoming more and more of everyone's daily lives. And not only that, she learns through a very different way than the way that we will have grown up learning, right? There's a lot more fun in the way that kids learn today. They learn by playing games. My older daughter, her favorite game right now is Sushi Monster on the iPad. Anybody use that? It's a math game, right? And it's all about addition and subtraction and multiplication. But she loves it. It's not your usual flashcards. But it's really teaching her in a really fun way how to do pretty advanced math for a 7-year-old. And my younger daughter, her favorite game is Alien Buddies. Right? Does anyone have small kids? It's learning colors and dragging aliens around who match their colors, right? And they love that, and it's so great to see them get concepts that are very abstract through learning and playing games. So this notion of fun is really important, and we not only see it in our personal lives, we also see it at work. So if you look at when we put out PowerPivot originally in 2010, we actually had a lot of people, consultants, who would come back to us and say that they really loved using the product. They were having fun with it. And they were having so much fun with it, they were actually, you know, they would spend their days working in PowerPivot at a client site and go home and use it to track their football statistics, their baseball statistics, their fantasy football games. We had one consultant who has some massive collection of wine bottles, and he would track those in PowerPivot. So we went to our marketing folks, like Goro Sayang, and we said, you know, we really like this notion of fun. We think it's really important. And they said, nah, we can't talk about fun. It's not serious. It's not business, right? But really, that fun part is very important because we want that as part of our jobs, right? What we do at work and finding insights shouldn't be not fun. So that fun also has its own rewards. It keeps people in the tool. It keeps people using the tool over and over again. It gets them through that learning curve that you have to get through, because there is still some learning curve around learning how to use data and learning how to consume data and finding those insights. But really, we think this idea of fun is really important. So let's go ahead and take a look at a little bit of that. I'm going to switch over, and I'm going to refresh because my session has been running low here. All right, so after we introduced PowerPivot, which was an add-in inside of Excel, we went to a web offering called PowerView, and I'm going to show you a little bit of PowerView. It is in the browser, and you can see it's fully in the browser, and it is a cross between PowerPoint and Excel. Right? We want users to use data and to be able to present data and do it well. So I have an extension of the data set that Sayang used, and it is about movies, right? So I've got a set of movies. And one of the great things about PowerView is that it's really good at transforming the look of data. So if I come in here And I've got a lot of fields, so I'm going to just remove one of them. And I can switch that to a different view, which is a card view, really easily. And it's the exact same data, but within a single click, I can really change the way that it looks. And in fact, I can go ahead and also sort it. So I'm going to sort the movies by their domestic gross. And you can see this data set is about a year old. So you can see some of the big movies that were playing at the time. Avatar, there was a rerun of the Titanic a while ago, Dark Knight, movies such as that. So let's go ahead and add some more views. I'll go ahead and grab the genres of the movies. So these are how movies get categorized, and we'll look at the production budget. And this is how much the industry is spending on different categories of movies, and I'll change that into a column chart. Again, just one single click, and it'll go ahead and change that. I don't have to think about where I want to put the different dimensions and measures and try to figure all those things out. It just knows and does it for me, right? So I'm going to grab the MPAA rating, that's the movie rating, and we'll look at the domestic gross on that one. And I'll go ahead and change that to a bar chart. So on a bar chart, so in a very few clicks, I've got a really nice looking report. Right? It's about six or seven clicks. But not only is it easy to create, it's also fully interactive without the user having to do anything to add the interactivity. So for example, I can come in and click action, and it's going to show me the contribution of the action movies to the different ratings. It filtered this list so you can see action movies, Mission Impossible. If I come down here and pick rated R, it's going to do the same thing. It'll filter the list, Passion of the Christ, show me the contribution by the different genres of that rating. So really easy for users out of the box to get all kinds of different insights within just a very few clicks. So let's do a couple of other things. I'm going to change this into a scatter chart. And for a scatter chart, I need a couple of additional measures. So I'm going to grab, I've got the production budget, and I'm going to I'm going to change it to the movie budget. And I'm going to compare that to the movie gross. So what I'm doing is, for each genre, remember each of these is a genre, I'm comparing how much gets spent on the movie versus how much money it makes. Right, and you can see there's a very tight pattern. Can people guess what the top two genres for movies are? Top two genres? Action, sci-fi? Okay. What was that? Kids. Kids is a good guess. Yeah, the top one is animation, actually. The second one nobody actually said, which is comedy. Yeah. The second one is comedy. And animations you all get, right? Lots of different animated movies over time. Shrek, Toy Story 3. Can anyone guess what the top grossing comedy movie is of all time? Top grossing comedy movie. Hangover. Good guess. That's actually a really good guess. You know why? Because I will bet you $100 that nobody will actually guess what it is. And the reason is, and I'm going to show you what it is, Meet the Fockers. You would never, ever guess that Meet the Fockers is the top grossing comedy movie because the top 50 movies ever made, not a single one of them is a comedy movie. Right? If you look at the top 50 grossing movies ever, not a single one is a comedy movie. And you would not guess that these are the top ones. Hangover was a really good guess because it was the second highest grossing movie, right, for comedies. So how is it possible that comedy movies are the second highest grossing overall genre when none of the top movies are comedies that actually get made? And the reason for that is if I take a look at the title and I drop this into the size bucket, there's just a lot of them, right? So if you look at animations, only about 322 movies of animation in this data set. But in the same time period, there were 1,140 comedy movies, right? So that's why comedy is the second highest rated genre, or second biggest grossing genre, just because there are sheer numbers of movies. And that's a really easy insight to get just with a single measure added to this particular chart. So the other thing I can do is come in and look at the release decade. So let's go ahead and put the release decade on the play axis. And you can play data over time in PowerView. And you can do that just by clicking, and you'll see everything starts off kind of small, and over the time, comedy comes out, and then animation dwarfs it, right? So let's go ahead and pop that out and take a different look at it in a different way. And I'm going to put that on vertical multiples now. And what that's going to do is actually give me four different charts, one for each of the different decade buckets that I have. And you'll see that the first one is 1979 and before. So we have a bunch of movies from before 1979, then 1980 to 1989, and 1990-99, and then 2000 and beyond. Now, the reason why in the olden days everything is down here is because these are the original prices, right? So the original amount of money that they made gets dwarfed because of inflation over time. So we can also fix that. So let me add filters. And I can come here, we have this profit scale thing. Now I stick in the profit scale and I say, well, I want to look at the relative price or relative grosses of the movies. Then I get the numbers that I'm looking for, right? So I've basically used another measure to adjust for inflation. So if you look at 1979 and before, there's not very much of a pattern to the how movies made money. Look at this tight line here. That says the more I spend on the movie, the more I'm likely to make on the movie. And the studio houses have really got this nailed down now, right? But back in before 1979, no such thing. People were making movies. Sometimes they were successful and sometimes they were not, right?
Producers weren't very smart back then.
They weren't very smart, okay. Yeah, you're right. We've gotten a lot more intelligent over time. So you'll see, for example, sci-fi, lots of gross. They didn't have to spend a lot of money on sci-fi to make a lot of money here. But all of these actions and thrillers, it just weren't doing very well. And if you look at the actual, let me go ahead and make this a little bit bigger. If you look at the actual categories that were very popular back then, these are not categories that we see anymore, right? Musicals and historic epics. When was the last time you watched a musical at the theater? Probably not that recently, right? No, they are making a little bit of a comeback. But back in before 79, Fred Rogers, Ginger, gosh, I got those names all wrong. Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers, thank you. We had a lot of musicals back then. It's very different than today. Historical epics, Ben-Hur, Cleopatra. I remember watching these reruns over and over as a child, right? All of those big movies were very popular. And then if you look into the 80s and 1989-ish, period adventures all of a sudden came up. Anybody know why? Indiana Jones, right? It's all Indiana Jones-driven period adventures in the 80s. And then in the 90s, comedy really started growing, and so did animation a little bit. What happened in the 90s? In the early 90s, it was when Harry Met Sally, Sleepless in Seattle, and all of those other great comedies. Comedies really became a really popular genre. And then Pixar happened, right? Now, if you want to make a movie, don't put actors in them, right? Just make them with computers, and that's how we make money now. It's been very different and a really interesting journey for movies over time. Let's take a different look at the movies. So I've got a list of movies by the amount of money that they make. And I'm going to show them to you. This is Avatar, obviously, at the top. And I'm going to show you the seasonality of these movies. So if I take a look at the revenue and I look at the month, this is every month in the last 6 or 7 years or so. And the revenue that was made by all of the movies that were released in that month. So I'm going to change that into a column chart. And you'll see that there's these peaks in the movies. What month makes movies for the theaters? May, June, nope. September, nope. November, December, no! There's actually 1 month that makes movies for the movie industry, and it's actually, it's July. Summer blockbusters are actually not summer at all. They're only July, okay? So it's July, and July, and July, right? And these are all July. So each one of these peaks is a July month in the movie industry. And you can see that, you know, in the early 2000s, there was a really pretty good growth in the revenues for the movie industry. And then we had the recession, right? And there's this big dip in people going to the movies, and it started to recover recently. Actually, let's focus on the last couple of years. Anybody know what the biggest grossing movie was this last, in 2011, last summer? Alyssa's going to restart. Harry Potter, yep, followed by the Transformers, right? What were the top grossing movies in the second highest summer in the last few years? Transformers and Harry Potter. It's the same movies. So if you want to make money in the movie industry lately, it's not only that you make, you know, specific kinds, you just have to make these two. And it's guaranteed to work, right? Never mind anything else. We'll just have to convince J.K. Rowling she needs to write another book. That's just a minor detail, right? So that one's interesting. Then also, if you think about people, obviously people are very important to us, because we think a lot about actors and actresses, right? So let's take a look at, you know, if I'm somebody who manages one of the brands of these people, it's really important to me to understand how well they're doing. Or if I'm a movie director and I'm going to hire one of these people, I want to know kind of how their performance is. So I have this data all by the actors that are in these movies. And does anybody want to call out an actor name? Let me give you a little hint. somebody who's a mega blockbuster. Tom Cruise. Nah, not that one. Somebody who has a bunch of adopted children, has a, about to get married. Angelina. Okay, let's try it. Let's try Angelina. That's a good one. Good guess. Angelina. Oh, I spelled it wrong. Angelina. Okay. All right, so let's take a look at Angelina Jolie. So I did was a little search, and here are all the movies, and I'll create a little column chart with it. These are all the movies that Angelina has starred in. And let's go ahead and sort that by the domestic gross. Looks pretty good, right? She's got some serious blockbusters, serious moneymakers up there. And you can see what those are. But maybe if I'm a director and I'm going to go and hire her, I don't want to just know what the gross is. I actually want to know if the movies were profitable, right? So that's the budget of the movie, and I want to subtract that away from the actual gross of the movies. So let's go ahead and change the measure that I'm looking at from domestic gross to profit loss. And let's go ahead, oops, I deleted the wrong one. So let's move this one. All right, let's sort by profit loss. Not so good anymore, huh? So about half the movies she makes money. The other half doesn't really, right? She's got a couple of big blockbusters and then one really big disaster, right? This one just really did not do well. But maybe that's kind of the way things are in the movie industry. If you're a really big blockbuster actor or actress, you have a couple of really great movies and everything else is sort of just break even, you know? But I don't really know that, so I could compare that to a different actor or actress and maybe see whether that's really true. So I'm going to go ahead and copy and paste that. And let's drag that to the bottom. Right? All right, so who should we compare her to? Jennifer Aniston. Wow, that's good. Let's do that. That sounds like a great comparison. All right, let's pick Jennifer Aniston. I'm not sure I want to hire Angelina anymore. Jennifer Aniston makes a ton of money off movies, and not very few of them don't make money, right? This is a very different curve for a different actress. Okay, so let's go ahead and figure out what kinds of movies these ladies are making. Let's look at the genres of the movies. And let's look at the genres of this movie, too. So Jennifer Aniston, what kind of movies does she make? Comedies, right? Jennifer Aniston is the queen of comedy. If you want to make money, you hire Jennifer Aniston and you make a comedy movie, and you're bound to make money. There isn't a loss here, right? How about Angelina? Animation. If you want to make money with a movie with Angelina, you don't put her in the movie, right? You just leave her out, and you're going to make money on it. So, you know, there's some really, really interesting insights. Never have realized. So one of the things that people complained about when we originally did PowerView was that you didn't have a lot of control over the colors and the backgrounds and things. So we did add that, right? So you can actually change. There's a bunch of styles that you can change to. Oh, it didn't like my joke so much. There you go. Okay. Or if you don't like the backgrounds that we have, you can also add an image of your own, right? So and we have this great transparency feature that allows you to decide how the image looks in the background. So I just went to the web and I picked one. Oh, I'll make it disappear again. So they said that this was going to be okay at SharePoint conference because, you know, you guys know how to have fun. Is that right? Okay. Well, that's just a little fun. All right. So let's go ahead and move on to what's next. So after we built PowerView in 2012, SQL Server 2012, as Siyoung said, we spent a lot of time integrating into SharePoint, into both SharePoint and into Excel. So what you can do now inside of Excel is you can take movies or you can take data and you can directly get a PowerView view on top of that data. So I have this list of foreign movies actually, and if I select all, in one click I can say insert PowerView and it'll actually create this PowerView report for me and land the data on the page. Okay? So within a single click, I took data that I grabbed from the web and I added it to the data model inside of Excel and I got a PowerView sheet with it, okay? A single click. And I didn't know as a user that I was doing any kind of modeling, but that's exactly what I just did. I added this data to the data model, okay? So what this data is actually just a set of foreign language movies and how they've done at the Oscars, right? So here's my list. There's a bunch of movies in here, the year and the movie name. So a better way to look at this, of course, is I want to see the foreign movies. I've got country, and I've got whether they won or lost, because these are, again, movies that were nominated for the Foreign Film Award. And I want to show that by the count of the movie. So I'll put that there. And of course, the best way to look at this data is not in a table, but in a basketball. Right? The little map icon up there is actually a little basketball-looking thing. And really easily, within a single click, what do I have? I have a map that shows me the distribution of the movies by country and whether they won or lost the Academy Awards when they were nominated. And I can do things like fill in, right?
And before we get the question, the map connects back to the Bing map services. So if you have data that has geographic coordinates or if you have data that has city fields in it, it will actually send it to Bing. Bing will find the coordinates for you, and they will plot it on the map for you. So it's completely connected to our Bing services for those of you who are interested.
Right, so I did nothing, right? I took the table in Excel, I added a PowerView sheet, I said, show me countries, and it sent countries up to the Bing service, geocoded them, figured out that they were countries, and plotted them on the map with the data, okay? All within a couple of clicks. So the other thing I can do, of course, is instead of seeing these little pie charts, which we also now have, I can add that to vertical multiples, and I'll see the comparison of the countries with the nominations and the winners, right? So if I zoom in, and I can do nice things when I zoom in, like I can decide that instead of this gray background, which isn't very pretty, I can actually go and get the aerial views, right? So now I can see really easily the countries where I have missing bubbles, right? So for example, let's look at France. If I look at France here, it'll show me the France bubble there. How many French movies got nominated? 27. And about 12 of them won. That's pretty good, right? If we go in and look at movies or countries where, let's say, for example, Poland, no wins, right? Poland had 10 nominations and no wins. And if I come down here, you can actually see there's a really big missing bubble down here, right? So Israel has been really, really ignored by the Academy. 10 nominations and absolutely zero wins, right? Probably very serious movies. Like, I Love You, Rosa. but, you know, there are probably some really great movies in there, and people would love to go and see them. So really easy, you can get maps and map data. Let's go ahead and also, what I did was I copied in a fairly small table, right? And data doesn't have to just be small size, even inside of Excel and with Power View. So what you can do is actually also use many, many different rows and big data, okay? So what we did was we got a little connector, and we were shipping this probably in a few months, I think. There will be a CTP. There is a Hadoop connector for SQL Server now, and it will allow you to connect things like to the Twitter service, and you can extract a whole bunch of different tweets, and there are many different ways that you can do that, but that's what we did. We extracted about 12 million tweets. They're in the data model in this workbook, in this case, okay? So a pretty big set of data, and used against Twitter. So what I can do is go ahead and change this little table into a column chart, and I can show you what the data was about. So let's look at the tweet date. So what we did was we took a set of Twitter data from between February and the end of May, and you can see there are these two peaks, right, for movies. These are movie tweets. And there are two peaks for movies in the March 23rd and May 4th, okay? So let's go ahead and figure out what those tweets were about. I'm going to go ahead and grab the movie title, and we can grab the number of tweets for the movies and make that into a bar chart and sort it. Okay. What do you think were the big movies then that got tweeted a lot? Okay. Pretty easy to tell, huh? Hunger Games was the first peak. And you can see moving up to the Hunger Games, there was a bunch of tweeting going on, right? Because people read the books. There was a lot of anticipation for that movie. And you can see that spike absolutely is based on that Hunger Games peak. Next one, Avengers, same thing, right? A lot of anticipation, great amount of interest, a lot of tweeting about the Avengers and that that particular movie. So not only did we grab Twitter data for movies, we also actually grabbed Twitter data for actors too, right? So let's look, I'm not gonna build these because we'll save a little bit of time. Same time period, pretty much, we extended it a little bit. Anybody know what these 20 people have in common? Nobody knows? Okay, they are the nominees for Best Actor and Supporting Actor and Best Actress and Supporting Actress for the Academy Awards this last year. You've forgotten about them already. Okay, so let's take a look at the tweet counts. So you can see the tweet counts for all of these people. This spike, what is it? That's the nominations, right? When the nominations occurred, there was a ton of spike for these people, right? Because obviously people are talking about them. They're very excited that they got nominated. Let's look at some of the people that were nominated. So if I click on Melissa here, for example, Melissa McCarthy, she got nominated, and nobody was talking about her before, right? And then there was this huge spike, and now you've all forgotten about her already, apparently, right? She doesn't get tweeted a lot. But let's compare that to one of our favorite guys. We've already talked about him a little bit. Brad Pitt. Nobody cares if he gets nominated, right? People will tweet about Brad Pitt, whether he gets nominated or not, and this pattern is always there, right? People, it doesn't matter if he's going to win an award or not. He's going to get tweeted about. So you can see there are very different tweet patterns. And so also, if you're managing one of these people, we talked about managing as somebody's representative, you kind of want to know not only how much they're tweeted about, but whether the tweets are good, right? So what we did with some of this data was we looked at the words that were being tweeted, and we categorized them to make a sentiment score. So if someone said that they loved the actor, then that was positive, and if they said that they hated the movie, then it was a negative tweet. So we did a sentiment calculation, and you can see these are all the different actors. Over time, you can see some interesting patterns in the data. You can't really see them when they're just blinking around, right? But you can definitely tell that there's differences. Some people's bubbles are moving much more differently than others. All right, so let's take a look at some of these people. Let's first take a look at, how about Max von Sydow? Anybody know what he was nominated for anymore? I had to write a cheat sheet because I can never remember the title of this movie. It's extremely loud and incredibly close. And I always mix up the words, so I wrote it down. But everybody remember that movie? It was the Tom Hanks movie. It had Max von Sydow in it. He was the guy who didn't talk in the movie, right? He's 84. And we're very excited that he got nominated. So he had pretty much no tweets before that date, right? So when, I forgot to put a tracker on him. Let's track him first. Yeah, come back and click on him. There we go. Okay. Where'd my trail go?
It's running away.
It's running away. It's running away. There we go. Okay. So when the nominations came around, people really started talking about him a lot more, and the sentiment was very, very favorable, right? There's this huge jump in sentiment. And over time, you can see that that sentiment stayed pretty strong, right? And it was very much more positive than before he was nominated. If you're a representative for Max, you love this, right? And you should be able to capitalize on this growth in sentiment and how people feel about him. Let's compare him to somebody else. And let's pick, how about Damien Bashir? Anybody know what he was nominated for? A Better Life, which was a foreign movie, I believe. Are just not very happy today. Okay, so nomination happened, and he was fairly positive to start with. And then after the nominations, people actually liked him less, right? Look at this drop. There was a little spike, and then people really, really said, huh, we're not sure he should have been nominated, right? And the movie was on IMDb is rated 6.6 or something, so you guys don't really like this movie anyway. But that really affected his sentiment. People said, maybe he's not worthy of the nomination, and maybe somebody else should have gotten that honor. And the sentiment really dropped for him over time. Now, if you're managing Damien, you should be controlling this, right? You should be able to see that the sentiment is declining on him, and you should be able to fix it before this kind of drop happens, because he ended up much more negative than he started even. And then lastly, who's our favorite person? The big bubble, right? The guy who gets tweeted a lot. What happens to the big bubble? Oh. There we go. Nothing. Right? People's sentiments don't change about Brad Pitt, just like they won't stop tweeting about him. They don't care if he's getting nominated or not. You either love Brad Pitt or you don't, and you don't change your mind about it, right? So his sentiment didn't change at all based on nominations that happened. Okay, very last thing. Keywords. I told you that we looked at all the tweets and found some of the keywords. I'll just show you some of them. Obviously, because it's Twitter, do you know how many hours we had to spend cleaning up the keywords to make a sanity check for this audience? Many, many, many. There were some interesting terms, right? But you can tell if I click on it. If you look at win, lots of people thought Meryl Streep was going to win, even before the actual awards happened. And she did, right? She really did. Who is most beautiful? It's Michelle Williams. And we've been talking about Brad Pitt a lot. But really, who do we really think is handsome, ladies? It's George, right? Never mind Brad. George is not only handsome, he's the guy we dream about, too, right? All right, so that's just a little bit of fun. Okay, so what we've shown you is both PowerView inside of SharePoint running on the web, PowerView inside of Excel with all of the end-to-end capabilities from starting with data that I grab on the web, getting it into the data model, building reports off of it, and the last step, of course, is publishing. So you can publish these reports to Excel services, And it's refreshing just to show you that it's actually live. And you can get the same views inside of Excel services, right? And they are interactive. You can still zoom in, and you can do all those great things inside of Excel services directly. But not only have we done that, what we have been working on, and we're going to show you just a quick preview of this, is mobile, right? Mobile is very important. Yes, you can consume some of the stuff inside of Excel services from the web, but if you really want a great experience, you want something that's native to a mobile device. So this is not shipping code yet, but basically we are working on two applications that will be native, one for Windows 8 and one for the iPad. And this is my Surface device, Windows 8, right? And basically, I have a set of reports that are kind of my favorite reports. And they've fallen asleep. Uh-oh. These devices don't get very happy when they fall asleep. Yeah. Close your eyes, you didn't see that. Okay, so there's my some of my favorite reports, and I can go through and take a look at them. If you're publishing either Excel workbooks or PowerView content, you can get it directly here. I can come in and take a look, for example. These are in Excel. If you're creating charts and stuff, you can go ahead and consume them on the mobile device. I can click and look at different values, right? And you can see that changing. I can also consume PowerView content, and we don't have the, we don't quite have the little screenshots done yet, but you can see that. Oh yeah, I know. Don't worry, we'll change it tomorrow. It's one of the great things. One of the great things about those mobile devices, you can always read everybody's password as they're typing them on the screen. Did the connector die?
Yeah.
There we go. Okay, so it's all kinds of challenges with multiple mobile devices. So there's my report, right? And I can still interact with it and see the contributions of the different genres, just like I showed you inside of Excel. Now, not only can I do that, but I may want to share this report. So what we've done in the Win8 application is, of course, hook into sharing. And just like Se-young said before, it works on the second try. It's always the second try that works. Ta-da! So now I can share, and I can share via email. So if I say I want to email somebody, or you know, if I have OneLook or some OneNote or something, I can go ahead and send to Outlook, to OneNote, and I can collaborate via Outlook also. But this time I'm going to send to SQL BI. Here's my report. I can add a message. I can type a note or something, and then I'll just mail it. Press the send icon. And if we're lucky, we'll actually, okay, it's done. So now,
if
we can switch over to this other device.
To the Apple.
Which is the iPad. I'm waving it around.
And so now I've switched to my iPad, and I've got a new mail. And I got a mail from Carolyn. And I got a mail that, you know, the new app. She sent me a report, and I opened it in the new app for the iPad as well. Right. You can see that the new report has shown up exactly as she sent to me. I can also go back to the entire catalog and go and see the different reports that are in there, such as healthcare, you know, movies, EuroCup as well. Right.
So that's just a really quick preview of some of the stuff we're working on in the future. Okay.
Right. So this is just a prototype. Thank you. We've never shown it anywhere, so you've never seen it either. And we're working on to get it released as soon as possible as well. Okay.
When do we get it?
As soon as possible.
All right, so let's finish up this presentation. As we've shown you before, we talked about simplicity and fun. We wanted to make it easy for people, power users and non-power users together, to create their data models, create their BI reports, their dashboards, and share it with everybody in their organization. At the same time, we wanted to make sure that it's fun and engaging to use. It's not just work, but it's your personal reports, it's your personal, you know, dashboards, as well as your corporate dashboards. You want to make sure that this entire process is not just work, but it's a very fun process, right? We want to make sure that it's a tool that gets broadly used. And if, for the IT pros out there, you know, We all share the same concern that if people start making the reports, it's going to be a lot of work. But believe me, it actually increases that span, right? It's a trend that we can't stop. We might as well adopt it. The self-service BI train is really going fast, and Microsoft is there to help you implement and drive your services as well. All these services work across the client, the server, and the services world, as you've seen before. We've made sure that these features like Power Pivot, Power View, Inquire, Quick Explore, Quick Analysis are embedded natively in the client, the server, as well as the services, as we've shown you today. So with that, we'll end this session. We'll be here for the next 10 minutes to answer questions, but with that, we'd like to end this session. Thank you very much.
Thanks.